Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Cellar Show here on Sirius XM Channel 99. I'm here, of course, as always, with my very, very good friend, Mr. Dan Natterman. Hello, Dan. How are you?
How do you do?
All right. And we have two pretty important comedians. Mr. Des Bishop is here.
Thank
you. Who's become one of my favorite guests on the show.
No, I'm blushing.
He knows a lot about a lot of things that I didn't realize he knew a lot about.
Well, because he's very good looking and you underestimated him.
That's probably right.
Fine description, Dan. Thank you.
And then Chris Gethard, who has his own late night talk show now. What's called the Chris Gethard Show?
Yeah.
And it's on
True TV.
On True TV. And yeah. I don't watch anything but Fox News, but I heard that it's very good. I think I told you they were buzzing about it at True TV when I had a meeting with them one time.
I'm happy to hear
that.
Did
I tell you that?
I think you have mentioned that. Yeah.
And he has a wonderful podcast called Beautiful Anonymous also.
Chris, is there an angle to this talk show, or is it just your standard talk show?
Oh, it's as far from a standard talk show as it gets. It's a live show where people can call in, and I never do a monologue or a political joke. It's just pure chaos all the time.
Well, it's about time.
Hold on. We have a guest of honor. We got to introduce the guest of honor first, and then we can get Mr. Ira Glasser, who was head of the American Civil Liberties Union from what years?
78 to 2001.
78 wow. to 2001. These were the golden years of the ACLU, and I remember reading somewhere that you were credited with taking the ACLU from a small-time mom-and-pop operation to becoming the national force that it is today, right? You're that Ira Glasser.
I'm that Ira Glasser. It was, it was pretty well established before me, but it grew a lot. Yeah.
It grew a lot. And you were the man behind the decision to defend the Nazis when they wanted to march.
No, actually, I was not. That was a case that was handled by our Illinois affiliate locally at the time. And at that time, I was not the national head of the ACLU. I was the head of the New York Civil Liberties Union. So I was really had no part in the initial decision. I had a large part in defending that decision, but not in making it.
And you defended it wholeheartedly?
Yes.
And you would defend it again today if you had to?
Yes.
And do you think the Civil Liberties Union today, if the Nazis wanted to march now in Skokie, Illinois, would defend it again? Because I think they wouldn't.
Yeah, I am worried about that. I would hope so. I've been retired now for nearly 17 years, and I am no more familiar with the day-to-day stuff of the ACLU than you are reading the newspapers. But there's a number of reasons to question whether or not they would as vigorously and as unambiguously defend those rights as they did then.
Yeah, well, and this is, there's an intersection between what comedians are concerned about and what the ACLU is concerned about. And I always thought that, of course, the Constitution protects us from government action, but there's also a spirit of civil liberties, which we kind of live by in our day-to-day lives, and that seems to become eroded as the fight to protect our actual civil liberties become eroded, so that we see in the workplace people are not tolerating people having their opinions, people being fired, the Me Too things we have with Louis and Aziz.
Yes.
This is somehow all related to me.
It is related, and it's a mistake to think that the right of free speech flows from the First Amendment. It's actually the other way around. The right of free speech comes first, and the First Amendment makes it easier, gives you a weapon to protect free speech if it's the government trying to repress it. We had a case in the early 70s where a man who was seen at a parade on a Saturday when the factory he worked at was closed in upstate New York, Midstate New York, he was participating in a parade that was urging the impeachment of President Nixon. This was 1973 after the Watergate stuff. And
Des, Watergate was this big.
Thanks very much for you. Thank you. I would have preferred a synopsis of the Nazi incident rather than your joke about Watergate.
All right.
And
go ahead.
He came into work Monday morning and his boss fired him.
Yeah,
because he had seen him demonstrating for impeachment, and he was a pro Nixon guy, and so the question arose: Can you do anything? Can we do anything? The ACLU about this guy's right of free speech? If a cop had arrested him for participating in that demonstration, we could have done something about it.
Right.
But because this was a private employer, we couldn't. Now, we could remonstrate about it. We could make a lot of noise about it. If there was a contract involved, we could say that there was a violation of the contract for an illegitimate reason. But basically, the right of free speech is relatively unprotected when the power that interferes with it is not a government power. And that's a terrific problem, because employers have that power, private universities have that power, private corporations of all kinds.
And this is where the comedians, I hope you guys are worried. Like, now with social media and the instant call to boycott, you can take people down, and people are looking. I mean, there's professional.
Yeah, well, there's clearly an industry of outrage.
Yeah. Let's just keep our antennas up to find somebody that said something that we don't like, and then let's gather the clouds.
Can you find something that I think Noam exaggerates the extent to which comedians are censored by the public or by the culture?
No, they censor themselves because they're worried about it.
Okay, well, we've always censored ourselves.
No.
I mean, can you? Every comedian has always had to censor themselves because our job is to go over in front of the audience.
But you weren't worried about making jokes. What Sam Morril almost got taken down for making a joke about the alligator. The woman.
Well, I don't think that's a sign of the times. I think that's the alligator that killed a kid in, I think it was Florida. Sam Morril made a joke, and an audience member was very upset about it. I don't think you can. I don't think you can blame the times that we live in for that.
Look, Chris Rock came in here and made a joke, which was pretty prescient about.
Not only was it prescient, but it was very. It foretold what was going to happen.
And about the Me Too movement, and where he made a joke about being afraid to hire women and being alone with them because, you know, he's a target. And immediately, Page Six.
Oh, that's right. That piece in the Post.
Page Six picked it up, and they spun it very negatively against him. And then it went viral. It got.
Yeah, there's no question that that's always been the case, as you say. And there's also no question that it's much worse now.
Well,
wait. And he didn't come back here for 3-4 months.
Can you think of a classic comic bit from the past without getting into Lenny Bruce? Because, quite frankly, I'm not familiar with his work.
Did I answer your point? I'm saying now here's a guy, Chris, is afraid to say certain things. Where years ago he wasn't worried about the
consequences. The Lenny Bruce thing was all about the government. The government shut him down. The government arrested him. The government prevented him from performing. It was never the public.
Yeah, well, now it's the mob.
Can you name a classic comedy bit that couldn't be done today from the past?
Yes. What's it?
All in the Family.
I'm 80 years old in a month, and I'm forgetting names.
Oh my God! You look fantastic.
I am fantastic, but I can't believe you're on.
You're going to be. He's looking at you closely now. I see that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you have to. The basic political strategy is outlast the sons of bitches, and so that's what I'm doing.
That's amazing. For
and but the name of that I'm forgetting.
It's okay.
The name of that the famous Jewish comedian who is
Jackie Mason. Woody
Jackie
Allen?
Mason.
Jackie Mason.
Jackie Mason. Jackie Mason could not perform today. He could
That's
not.
Right. He does perform today.
He went quiet for a long time in the middle of his career anyway, right? Didn't he get in trouble for something?
He called David Dinkins a fancy schwarzer with a mustache, and he did get, deservedly so, he got in some trouble for that.
Well, he's got into trouble. But you know, it's okay to get into trouble for what you say. You got to make a distinction between your right to say something and the right of other people to trash you for it.
Right. Yes.
But not prevent you from saying it.
Jackie
Mason's Broadway show, which he did in the, I guess, in the 70s.
Late 80s.
That couldn't run today.
Wait, Chris, because you're talking.
I was going to say, I do think we often forget that as comedians. I'm as for free speech as anyone. I do think sometimes these things happen, and the knee-jerk reaction of comedians is like, we're comedians. We have to be allowed to say whatever we want. And we forget the half of, people are also allowed to get mad at us.
Yes.
There needs to be a middle ground, though, where people's careers aren't ruined
overnight. That's all that concern.
People are allowed to be super pissed off at anything
said. The concern is because people feel like that is the result now, to take somebody down. But I'm not exactly sure what they think we're gaining from that.
You know what's very fascinating as well is, and correct me if I'm wrong, I used to feel that liberalism were the defenders of free speech. Now I actually feel that it's a very, it's rooted in the progressive movement to take people out. Yeah,
well, there was never, it was always a mistake to conflate liberalism with libertarian
principles.
Civil liberty, most of the people who supported civil liberties, who were members of the ACLU, were liberals. I always regarded that as unfortunate because if you believe in civil liberties, it has to be across the spectrum. It has to be for everybody or it's for nobody. But the fact is that historically, liberals have only been for free speech when it's their free speech, or the speech of people that they agree with. The progressives in the early part of the 20th century were not, by and large, civil libertarians across many issues. The fact that the people who call themselves progressives today are against what they call hate speech is not surprising to me, and it's not unprecedented, and it's not a historical aberration. It's always been thus. And of course, what they don't understand, tragically, they don't understand, is that the only thing that matters in a free speech controversy is who gets to decide. And that's people right. who don't have power, whether they're progressives or liberals or conservatives or people who don't have power are never the ones who get to decide. If you give the government the power to stop, to censor, to punish hate speech, it all depends on who is in the government who's going to be doing that. If the government is Rudolph Giuliani or Richard Nixon or Joe McCarthy or Donald Trump, who do you think is going to get, whose speech you think is going to get repressed? Right. It isn't going to be David Duke. It's going to be the progressives.
But isn't it fair to have a concern that if hate speech incites violence, that you should control it?
Well, the key phrase there is incites violence.
You walked right into his trap, Des. Go ahead.
Well, that's fine. I mean, somebody got killed in Charlottesville, so I'm happy to discuss it.
No. Charlottesville, it's like to talk about guns. You have to remember that in Charlottesville, the instrument of killing was a car.
That's right.
It was not a gun. And the people who carried guns around were like the people, like the Black Panthers carrying guns in the 60s. I never heard any liberals complaining about that. Never. But when it was right-wing crazies who were carrying the guns, the liberals said, oh, they're inciting violence. The violence came from somebody in a car, and the reason that that violence happened and the reason that that person was killed was because the police did a poor job of anticipating and protecting speech of both sides in a volatile situation. The incitement to violence can be stopped, but Eugene Debs.
So if you're talking about the cops and everything, just in terms of like controlling hate speech, so should guys?
I want to come back to Charlottesville, but go ahead.
Yeah, but should guys in tiki torches shouting "Jews will not replace us"? Is that the moment where the cops should say,
no,
"Guys, this is out of control"?
No, because when people who were against the war in Vietnam in the late 1960s and early 70s marched around saying, LBJ, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today? And burned him in effigy. Was that an incitement to violence?
It doesn't matter whether one or the other is. I mean, so some of them are.
Well,
so can you control
It becomes a factual matter of whether or not speech that people are fearful about actually incites violence. If you
can I add something to it? I think there's certain things we have to live with. Certain things are worth taking certain risks, even if some people get hurt. Because what happens is it just expands and expands and expands, such that today, this guy Ben Shapiro, who's a pretty mainstream conservative guy, doesn't say anything. They spend millions of dollars in security to have this guy be able to speak around the country at universities now. He's just a regular conservative because people are emboldened by this idea of incitement to violence, and there's this heckler's veto. So if you stop this guy because this is incitement to violence, all of a sudden the next group, oh, we're going to be incited to violence. There's going to be violence. And it expands and expands and expands.
I agree with that. That's why I use the most extreme example.
If from time to time there's some violence, from time to time there'll be some violence. Well,
let me try. I think that's right. But let me try to give you an example of what the law actually.
And then I want to read you what the current ACLU guys said.
Okay,
go ahead.
The law actually holds that a speech that is an incitement to imminent violence can be curbed. For example, if you have a lynch mob, and the lynch mob is marching toward a jail where somebody is held that they want to take out and lynch, and the guy says, "Let's get the son of a bitch," that speech
is not protected.
That's incitement. Incitement is not getting up on a soapbox and saying, as a man named Sidney Street did in New York in the late 60s, he burned an American flag, and he said, if people with my skin color can get lynched and shot in the South, then this flag does not represent the ideals it's supposed to. And he burned the flag, and he got on the 6 o'clock news. Other people took that as an incitement to violence, and he got arrested. We defended him. We won that case. You know, the fact that kids in Iowa in 1969 put on black armbands and went to school with the black armbands to protest the war against Vietnam, they got suspended by the principal on the grounds that their black armbands would incite other people to violence.
But there's a difference
in that. You had
there's
to
a
stop
difference.
That.
Chris Gethard begs to differ.
Well, because Charlottesville, I guess my question, and I'm not trying to be contentious for the sake of it, it's an honest question. If people show up with guns and clubs, some of them wearing what looks like tactical armor, and they're chanting, "Jews will not replace us," at what point is it fair for a Jewish person who comes from a culture that people have been hunted and killed, at what point is it fair for them to feel like violence is imminent?
Oh, no. They can feel that. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of that is symbolic. In fact, in Charlottesville, except for the guy who drove his car into the crowd, all of those guns, there were no guns fired. They were all symbolic. They were doing exactly the same thing that the Black Panthers were doing, except some people of our political sensibilities did not feel threatened by the Black Panthers carrying around guns, and we did feel threatened by these alt-right people carrying guns.
I guess my question is, because, you know, you're right, no guns were fired, but you watch that footage, and it looks like a small American city that has descended into lawlessness.
And that was because of police incompetence.
That's my exact question. At what point are the police
Let me tell you what happened in New York and in Chicago and in other places that didn't happen in Charlottesville. In New York in the 1970s, anti-war demonstrators marched down the caverns of Wall Street against the war. This is like 1971. Hard hats who were working on construction projects along the route attacked them. They were incited to violence by the anti-war speech. The anti-war people were not violent, but the people, the hard hats were. The cops stood by, and the city tried to ban the speech on the grounds that it had created the violence in other people. Nowadays, what happens is that in New York and Chicago and in many other places, although it didn't happen in Charlottesville, the cops know that if you're going to have two volatile opposing views in a contiguous space, that there's a potential for violence. What they do is they create barricades, they separate these people, and they protect the rights of both people to demonstrate. But they don't allow the what happened in Charlottesville to happen, which was chaos, and that was a failure of policing. It was not a who speech do you stop?
Right. Can I ask you this question? Because this is where, I mean, I don't like the idea of people walking around carrying guns, but, you know, I somehow think if it was a pro-choice movement and they were carrying guns, people wouldn't view it the same way. But is it a civil liberty to be able to live your life to the full extent that the law, through the democratic process, has decided you can? Meaning that if your community has decided democratically that we're going to allow people to carry guns, then don't you then have a civil liberty to say, yeah, I can go protest carrying a gun because it's a democracy and that's the laws that my representatives have made for me, and how can you blame me now?
Well, that's right.
That's my liberty. It may be a terrible idea.
Yeah, well, I think the Second Amendment has been completely misinterpreted.
No, I'm not saying the Second Amendment.
That's a separate issue.
I'm saying just the idea that these are the laws.
Right.
And
right.
How can you tell me now I don't have the right to do what it is my legislature has specifically said?
Symbolic speech is always a problem. When people burn flags, they got arrested for inciting violence. When people carry guns in a demonstration, in a society where they're allowed to carry guns, as you say, you got to make a distinction between speech, including symbolic speech, and conduct. Now, the difficult question is where does the speech bleed into conduct, and at what moment do the police step in?
Mm.
And the answer has to be that the police have to be good enough and competent enough to anticipate a volatile situation and protect the rights of both sides to speak, but keep them separate and have enough of a show of police force to prevent the chaos that happened in Charlottesville.
Yeah. Now, the guy in charge of the ACLU now, Executive Director Anthony Romero, told the Wall Street Journal, blah, blah, the events in Charlottesville require any judge, any police chief, any legal group to look at the facts of any white supremacy protest with a much finer comb. Romero told the Journal, if a protest group insists, no, we want to be able to carry loaded firearms, well, we don't have to represent them. We'll find somebody else. And I'm thinking, this is such a dodge because, A,
it is a dodge.
Nobody was shot, as you say. And B, it's not as if in like a protest in Chicago, where we know there's tons of illegal weapons being carried by the people in these protests, they're saying, well, we're not going to allow protests in places where there's lots of gun violence and we can presume there's lots of weapons. It's only when there's legal guns being carried, even though no one was ever shot,
and
now we're looking for a way not to defend them.
It's interesting that I mean, part of my problem with
where's it more likely to be a shooting?
Those kind of statements coming out of the ACLU these days is that they are determined by the content of the speech and not by the principle.
That's
involved.
Right.
You know, statement from the ACLU like that ever happened during the days when Huey Newton and Bobby Seale and the Black Panthers were marching around with guns, and every white person in America felt threatened by that.
Can we? It's clear, by the way, Noam, that he's dying to talk about the Second Amendment and take it head on.
You want to talk about the Second Amendment?
He's dying to. How can you not?
Can I ask a question before we move on?
Yeah, let's dive into the Second Amendment.
I want to talk about abortion. I want to talk about Anglo-American law. Go ahead.
Given what's happening,
just before we move on, because I find this very fascinating. As far as symbols go, I agree that things that are symbolic are speech. But at what point does a symbol presume a threat? Like if a gun is loaded, like if you bring a gun to a protest that's not loaded, I agree that it's a symbol. If you put bullets in it, aren't you in effect saying I have the ability to kill you in an effort to put someone on the defensive?
Well, that is the question that seems to be raised by what happened in Charlottesville. But again, you have to understand the violence in Charlottesville was by a car, not a gun. As far as I know, there were no guns fired.
Of course, but
let's presume for the sake of argument that somebody shoot a gun.
But I mean,
would that change your position in any way?
Yeah, you have to stop the guy who's shooting the gun.
But don't you feel it's unfortunate that we have to have this
discussion? You don't have to stop the guy who's carrying the gun on the grounds that maybe he'll shoot the gun.
But is it not fair to say that if I'm in Charlottesville and those guys show up and I am of a group that they are chanting against, they have a gun, is it not fair to say that maybe some of the people who participate in some of these melees do feel threatened?
But let me
and
ask
that
you this question.
Let me
answer your question, if I may. Is would You're saying, did you have a right to feel threatened? Let me ask you this. If you had had a gun, would you be justified in shooting them merely for chanting, Jews will not replace us with a loaded gun?
No, but I'm not the one who shows up with a gun.
There you go.
If someone shows up with a gun and it feels like a tense, violent situation, can you blame the person who's throwing a punch at the guys with a gun? If someone came to you in a situation with a gun and felt threatened, is it not? Don't you feel like you should try to...
It's a powder keg. It's dangerous.
It is.
Every time I went to a demonstration, a civil rights demonstration in the 60s, I mean every time, not just in the South, but in the Bronx, every single time, and I was surrounded by white, tough-looking kids who were furious to the point of losing control. Every single time, they didn't have guns. Every single time, I felt threatened. And every civil rights demonstration in the South, they always felt threatened. And sometimes they got killed because the police didn't protect them. But if you go to the 1980s, and the Klan is marching through downtown Atlanta. And by that time, the Klan is defanged. They aren't the Klan that they were in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s when they had power. Now they are demonstrating precisely because they don't have power. But every black person I knew was terrified by the sight of those people in their pillowcases and sheets marching peacefully through the streets of Atlanta because of what that symbol meant to them and their families in the past. And I know, the Jews in Skokie who were many of whom were survivors of the concentration camp. The idea that 10 people, 15 people, 20 people, unarmed, but marching through their streets with swastikas, that they would see that again, have to live with that again. Of course they were terrified, and they had a right to be terrified, but they didn't have a right to stop them.
But isn't that different than a loaded gun? Like, I hear what you're saying. A Nazi armband or a burnt flag can't...
Chris, I agree with you, but that has to be a matter for the legislature to legislate on what the conduct they're going to allow or not allow in public with guns. But we can't start selectively enforcing that because of the point of view of the person holding the gun.
All right, that brings us to...
You are right.
You agree with that?
Yes.
And I agree, too, that me being baffled that you can walk down the street with a loaded gun.
But you're saying you need, like, a Glasgow Rangers, Glasgow Celtic situation where anytime those two teams are playing each other, there is no way that they're anywhere near each other because it's too much of a dangerous situation. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that they can be near each other, but the cops have to keep them separate.
But you see,
protect both of their rights to say what they want to say.
Let me tell about Charlottesville, what was interesting.
Let's get to the Second Amendment, for God's sake. Have you been reading the papers?
What do you... Go ahead to the Second Amendment.
Have you been reading the papers?
Yeah, but I don't see the Second Amendment issue.
It's a huge issue.
Why? Go ahead.
Well, how is it not an issue? That's what people have been discussing. What are the limits of the Second Amendment?
I don't see any.
Look, the Supreme Court made a profoundly intellectually dishonest decision a few years ago, written by the most intellectually dishonest justice of all time, Scalia. And it was 5-4.
Yeah.
It was 5-4.
Waited till he died.
And what? No. I said it all the time while he was alive.
I have a feeling you would have said it right to his face.
I did say it to his face. In debates, the fact is that historically, the Second Amendment did not confer an individual's right to walk around with a gun.
Well, says who?
I mean, says history.
Shall not be infringed.
Militia. I got to say something.
Read the Second Amendment.
I've read it.
Boys, I'll let you go wherever you want, but I want to say something. The reason I say I don't see a Second Amendment issue, because I believe if there were no Second Amendment, you would still not see any gun laws passed in Florida or any gun laws passed in the United States of America. I do not think it's not happening because people say we don't have the right to do it. They don't want it. And that's why I don't see a Second Amendment issue.
Well, but there is a Second Amendment issue because the Second Amendment was designed by the states at the time that the Constitution was adopted. And they did not want to pass the Constitution or ratify it unless a Bill of Rights was added. And one of the things they were afraid of is giving up. You got to remember, this was sort of a little bit like the European Union. The states were sovereign entities. that did not want to yield power to a central federal government. And they were afraid that if they did yield power to a central federal government, the federal government would come down on them with armed force and take away their rights. They believed that. The Second Amendment was the result of that belief. What it did is it gave states the right to maintain state militias against the time when the federal government might move against them.
But couldn't they have? But when you look at the actual words of the Second Amendment, it doesn't say the state governments have a right to a right to a militia, but it says the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Boom.
No.
Well-regulated militia.
Yeah, I know. But if it said, look, cheeseburgers, everybody has a right to...
No one's ferociously Googling right now.
I'm going to read it.
No, but it can fairly be interpreted.
Look at the history. No, it can't fairly,
it can fairly be interpreted.
No,
to mean...
No, it cannot. It cannot fairly
the
be interpreted.
The words of the Second Amendment...
Let's read it. And it's interesting how it starts. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state. It's setting
That's
up
right.
the whole purpose
right.
of it. A right of a people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
But it doesn't say the right of people to keep and bear arms in the context of the militia. It says simply...
No, it does say it.
It simply says...
They mentioned the militia first.
They mentioned it first. They said this is the reason...
I understand Dan's point,
too. This is the reason.
This is not, this is not, this is, this is not a question... This is not a question of fighting...
If we just look at the words...
Over commas. Yeah, I'm looking at the words.
The words are at best ambiguous.
Do you know who you're arguing with?
I know. It's like watching a guy ride a bike uphill in
the
hurricane.
The words are not only unmistakable, but if you're serious...
Let him talk, Dan.
If you're serious about this, you have to read... The Constitutional Convention. You have to go back and read the debates. They tell you what they meant by it. And what they meant by it was to give the states the power to maintain militias. Now, back in those days, the states maintained militias. They didn't have armories. They maintained militias the way local towns today maintain fire departments. They sang an alarm, and people came with their cars to the fire. And what happened is people came with their muskets. And in order to allow the states to be able to maintain a militia when they needed it, they needed to protect the rights of their citizens to carry muskets. They didn't protect their rights to, they didn't talk, and that is the whole purpose of in fact, people were not allowed, if you've seen a lot of Western movies, do you ever see the Wyatt Earp movie?
Never did.
You never did?
No, I never saw.
Well, go see
then
it.
How, you know, how can you have a foot to stand on?
You know what? You know what Wyatt Earp did?
No.
He prevented people from bringing guns into town.
Yeah, Dan.
And nobody.
Well, Earp had no respect for the Second Amendment.
Well, he had a C-minus rating from the NRA.
The Second Amendment wasn't at play. Not in all those movies, not in all the newspapers, not in all the history.
Well,
do you ever see anybody raise the issue of the Second Amendment? Because the Second Amendment was designed to give the states power vis-a-vis the federal government. It was not designed to give individuals a right against state governments. So they banned guns all the time in the old West.
Anything else on the Second Amendment? You're going to disagree.
What do you want?
I want to hit a few of the main civil liberties topics going on in the country.
You fight it. How hard you fought to talk about the Second Amendment, but, only to have a person who's scholarly in the Constitution
well,
break it down
I'm
that hard.
I'm looking at the words of the Second Amendment. The words
he's got
to
you
me,
a disadvantage.
The words to me.
He knows his subject.
If you've never seen a Wyatt Earp movie,
I've never seen
and
a Wyatt Earp.
You've never read the Constitutional Convention debates where they discussed what they meant
by this. I have to take your word on the
this,
debates, but I will read them. I will read them.
Your attempt to analyze
I will read them. But
then we'll talk.
But I'm looking
will
at
you come
the
back
words.
And debate him?
Dan, have you seen
I'm
Young
looking
Guns
at,
2?
I'm looking at the
Young
word.
Guns 2.
I'm
has a Bon Jovi song in the
I'm looking at the words of the Second Amendment.
Choice for the soundtrack.
Just looking at the bare words of the Second Amendment, because
your argument doesn't stand up, even if only you do.
Well,
look
no,
at the
it
words.
Does stand up if you look
but
at the words. If you look at the words,
no,
it's at best ambiguous.
Right, Dan,
I don't care how much education he has.
I'm saying you're at an impasse here.
Because now we can talk about.
You're going to make
the
same.
We talked about the Second Amendment. Now we can talk about what practical things we can do, putting the Second Amendment aside.
That's what I tried.
What's the best way to protect kids in schools?
Oh, good question.
Do you believe? Let me ask you one of them. Do you believe
the Second Amendment
aside, the right to bear arms includes the right to? Own a tank?
No, I don't believe that.
Why not?
Well, you know what?
The Second Amendment doesn't distinguish.
Good point. Why not? That's why I propose, and you're right, it is a good point. Why not? I can't answer that because the words of the Second Amendment
because you don't know the history.
Shall not be infringed.
No, because you don't know the history.
Now,
how about a nuclear weapon? How about a nuclear weapon?
If I look at the strict word, this is why I propose we need to have a national referendum and revisit the Second Amendment.
No, you need to revisit what the Second Amendment means, and you need to learn your history before you think any more about it.
I think that my point is actually more important, which is that the intent, the desire of the country is not to limit in any meaningful way the right to firearms.
Well, I don't know.
It's very unfortunate.
And especially state by state. And if the federal government were to do it blanket and over the blue state, over the red states, they will really freak out, and we're going to have even worse social problems than we have now. Well, I think we're at an impasse. I think they're going to make certain slight adjustments, and I think that they're not going to do much good. But hopefully a few lives will be saved. Well, but as we know, the real violence, the real carnage is not in these unbearable mass shootings. It's in the day-to-day violence in cities, mostly with illegal weapons, they're killed by the thousands.
I want to speak to
you. That's not going to change.
It's one of many.
Percentage-wise, these are like lightning strikes.
But of course, life in,
But they're unbearable.
Life in hard neighborhoods and inner cities is an issue, but that doesn't negate the fact that we have to protect schools.
No, it doesn't negate it, but I'm saying
schools are a sacred place where children go. Like, it's a totally different environment.
But it may be impossible to, you can protect them. It depends how much. Like, I have two children in grammar school, and I would like there to be a guard with a gun at the school. I wish there was
a guard at the Florida school.
And he stood down.
He's texting outside.
It can't do any good with a lunatic with an AR-15.
But obviously, with
less legal guns, there's less of the illegal shooting. You don't have the same problem.
You can't just have a guard. You have to have one entrance, and a fence around the school. I mean, because and people have to enter through that one entrance.
If you could pass every law
that's a great way for kids to go to school.
I'm not saying it's a great way for kids to go to school, but if you want to stop it, that might help. No.
If you could pass every law that practically, like reasonably, you think actually could get passed the United States of America, obviously you're not going to disarm the whole country. Every one of these restrictions, background checks, raising the age, whatever it is, what percentage of gun deaths do you think we're looking to save here? 1%?
I would take 2%. That. Isn't that worth taking?
I'll take it. Yeah.
Well, here's the fact is...
But why don't you bring it down to like a European average?
Right.
I'll tell you why,
and Nate Silver has written about this, because we have tremendous social problems in this country that they do not have in Europe. And actually...
That require guns?
No. Actually... I'm afraid this goes to I'm going to repeat something that I read in 538.com, not on Richard Spencer's website, all right? In 538.com, he wrote that white America, with all its access to guns, Nate Silver wrote this, has gun violence just a little bit above Finland. Just a little bit above Finland. Non-white America has third world nation carnage. This is a social problem, which is, of course, exacerbated by the access to guns. But that we will never be like Europe, because we're not Europe.
But they have poverty in Europe, too.
It's not poverty.
No, they have violence.
No industrial developed country in the world has anything close to the gun violence we have.
That's right. However, it is still...
The difference is the availability of the guns.
But that's not according to what I read in 538.com.
But it's definitely more the difference.
538.com is not the Bible.
He had the stats. Listen, absolutely.
I don't like people who invoke authority
he's a data guy, right?
He's a data guy who predicted that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election.
Well, yeah, but his prediction was accurate.
His prediction wasn't accurate.
No, no. Well, actually, it was. He gave a 30% chance for Trump to win. 30% is 1 out of 3. He didn't.
Yeah, all I'm saying
we
is,
know what odds are.
All I'm saying is don't. You can't argue this by citing what somebody said as authority.
It doesn't make any sense.
Because I can cite somebody else that said something different
I actually looked into it. I was actually very skeptical of this article, and I did look into it, and I wasn't able to find a thing. And clearly we do have social problems in this country that they don't have in Europe. We do have problems here.
We're getting a little far afield here.
Okay. But yeah. I say that with a heavy heart. I hope it's not misinterpreted. I'm just saying that shut up, Keith. It can be very sophisticated.
It's interesting
to me that you
haven't mentioned the drug war yet, which no other country has the way we have.
On the drug war, probably more, and the drug more agreement
war,
with you.
And the drug war is the major reason why weapons proliferated in this country. The drug war and sales by the United States military.
And the drug war, it's on record that it's no longer conspiracy theory that black communities were targeted, right? This is a proven thing
well,
that the
I don't
CIA...
Think, no, that's not,
look,
not
look,
proven.
Look, Al Capone was white, and the people he shot and killed and blew up were mostly also white. And the dynamic that created that in the 1920s is the same dynamic that has created inner-city violence now. And the fact that the ethnicity of the actors have changed is not relevant. Now, the truth is that race, skin color, I should say, not race, because race is a fiction.
I agree with that, too.
Skin color has been an instrument of subjugation in this country from the very beginning. And it continues to be, and it's beyond class too, but that is not the explanation for violence. The explanation for violence has to do with what happened during the drug war and still happens, and with the proliferating availability, not just of weapons, not just of handguns, but of military weapons. When I said, would you think that the Second Amendment gives you the right to own a tank or a nuclear-tipped shoulder-to-air missile, everybody says no. But what about the AR-15? The AR-15 is a military weapon.
No, it's a semi-automatic. It's not a fully automatic weapon.
It's still a military weapon. It has no legitimate purpose except for that.
Can I just say this one? I just think that America has a love of violence, and this is beyond any racial. America has a love of violence in a certain way, which seems to go beyond some other cultures. It just seems to be.
Let me ask you this, Noam. You mentioned that America doesn't want profound gun control or gun laws.
Look at the glorification of like a violent culture in music videos and carrying guns and being menacing and
all
this stuff.
Look at John Wayne.
But he was for fighting the bad guys.
Only in his dreams. He never was in the military.
His character wasn't menacing to innocent people or look. I think it was different. Go ahead.
But Noam, you had said at the top of the conversation that America, with or without the Second Amendment, put the Second Amendment to the side. Americans don't want rigid gun laws. That may be true, but do we know that? Because you know the NRA makes a lot of noise and gun advocates make a lot of noise. But how does the average American feel about gun control? I've read.
Well, Florida could outlaw these AR-15s if it wanted to. It doesn't.
Well,
New York does.
I mean, from what I've read,
but
most surveys indicate that a majority of Americans at least want some, are in favor of some further gun control. I don't know if these.
Yeah, they say that until.
You know, one of my daughter-in-laws grew up in a small rural town in South Carolina. Everybody she knew, her grandfathers, her uncles, her cousins, everyone she knew had guns in the garage. They had shotguns, they had hunting rifles, they didn't have AR-15s. They didn't have bazookas. They didn't have hand grenades.
Can I rehabilitate
myself?
Why
should those be available?
Can I amplify now? Can I rehabilitate
fair
myself?
Fair enough, but you can make a good case that semi-automatic hunting rifles shouldn't be available.
Hold on. I want to say something. Let me rehabilitate myself and take this beyond the social problem that of race. There's also social.
Thank God you did, because I'm going to use the Al Capone example every
was
time
it?
I'm
no,
jammed
no, no,
up
no.
again. Because that was a great when example.
I, it was. What, to be fair, though, those were Italians.
When I was a kid, you could go to the local sporting goods store on Central Avenue right near my house and buy a rifle. It was in New York. It was very, and I imagine that we're living, even what we're living in now, guns are less available than they've ever been. Nevertheless, somehow, people weren't shooting up the schools. And now these school shootings, these are mostly in white communities, right? Something, we have a social problem. It's a different social problem, obviously, but there's a social problem too. I don't think that in Sweden, I think they do have guns in Sweden, actually. I mean, we have problems here in the white, life expectancy is going down, mental health is getting worse, opioid
that
addiction
pisses
is all,
me off, though.
But there's all kinds of problems. Families are breaking up. You have almost half the kids now are born without mother,
yeah, but
father,
the guy,
families.
The guy who killed all those people in Las Vegas was not mentally ill. He was not under 21. And he didn't have any visible serious problems of the kind you just mentioned.
He had so many calls. They had like 30, 40 calls about the guy. He did have visible problems. He did.
No, he's talking about the Vegas guy.
Oh, the Vegas guy. I'm sorry.
The Vegas guy.
Yeah, well, he may be an outlier, but I think like
you know, most mentally ill people are disabled. They're not, they, as a class, they are less violent than the rest of us.
Well, mentally damaged, you know, mentally ill maybe too much, but people are being damaged somehow.
I have to say something about this because
I think it's different.
I did a whole special about the fact that I suffer from extreme depression, from anxiety. I take antidepressants every day. I have for many years. I am, by the technical classification, mentally ill. I don't need a gun. I shouldn't have a gun. I think it's really, really disgusting that there is very, you know, the NRA, in my mind, the one thing they're certainly doing is pouring tons of money into their agenda. There are press releases that go out after every one of these shootings. Mental illness is the problem. The president tweeted, "This is not a gun problem. It's a mental illness problem." Less than 24 hours after the shooting in Florida, this is a point people drive. Gun owners like to say, "I'm a responsible gun owner who never killed anybody." Well, I'm a mentally ill person who's responsible. I've never killed anybody either. Of course, you have to be mentally ill to shoot up a school. You also have to have a gun. So the idea that the NRA fleeces the world with these press releases saying mental illness is the issue, while the Trump administration is also reducing money for mental health care.
I agree with you. What I'm asking is why do we seem to have so many more people who want to do these things? Now, maybe it's just the power of a copycat situation where now it's on the radar and nobody ever thought of it, and now it pops into everybody's mind immediately. I don't know, but
because there's a rot within our country,
the problem is you can never get to the bottom of controlling the variety of ill-defined sociological problems that spit up, that produce people who will be conducive to carrying out those kinds of crimes. What you can do is keep them from having the means to do it.
We can mitigate it. You're not going to keep it.
No, you can regulate it way better.
How much incredible low amount of regulation for
the amount of damage that a gun can cause.
I agree with you, but don't get your hopes up about the regulation.
No, here's what I would say.
You asked the question, why do other
countries... for drugs.
You asked the question, why do other countries not have people want to do this?
Drugs are banned, not regulated enough.
My argument would be other countries do have those people. They just have less access to guns and more access to mental health care. There's crazy people everywhere.
You know, I'm no expert on this, so I'm
and there always have been crazy people.
I've heard things to the contrary, but I think it's Sweden or certain countries in Europe where they do have a lot of gun ownership.
Switzerland is the example that they use.
Yeah. I get those two confused.
But it's way more regulated than here. not as liberal.
Well, they have like the in Switzerland.
All the SW countries.
I think in Switzerland
all the social Democrats.
They only get a certain amount of ammo, and they
it's more regulated than here.
And it's certainly more regulated.
There's also Northern European countries that have legendarily good health care, which I have to assume means that there's also easier access to mental health care.
Maybe you're right. Yeah, but they did.
They had one mass shooting.
Don't construe anything I'm saying. I'm no gun guy. I don't want anybody to have a gun. I'd be happy taking guns away from every. Like if they wanted to disarm everybody, I'd be all for it. I'm just saying, I'm skeptical.
You're the antagonist. That's your job.
I'm just saying that it's
well,
we have to yell about something, right?
Nothing is ever as easy as people seem to think it is.
That's one thing I do not think is easy here in America.
The ACLU. So you and I agree that they've kind of folded on this idea of protecting any speech at all. And then
they backed off from their initial position.
Okay, they backed off. And I'm also, like the people like Ben Shapiro or Charles Murray come to speak at campuses, and now they're people are. And I'm like, I want to send my kids to the university where these people do speak, because what are they going to learn by hearing some people who are just going to tell them what they already believe or challenge them? So you agree with me on that? This is nuts.
I do. Look, I grew up in a liberal New York household. My father was a labor union activist. My mother's father was a labor union activist. They all worshipped FDR. I didn't hear a contrary idea until I was in graduate school in Columbus, Ohio, from anybody. My received wisdom was all, you know, I learned that it was ridiculous to be storing wheat in battleships off the coast of New Jersey while people in other countries were starving. When I got to Columbus, Ohio...
Dan thinks you should be able to have a battleship, but go ahead. Yeah.
No, I don't think... I have to clarify that I also am not a gun person, and I also could care less if people don't have guns,
okay.
but...
In the middle of the story...
But, yet, but you accuse me of something that has special resonance given the conversation.
Dan thinks the Constitution is not apparent from the Constitution why you should not be able to own a battleship. Fair?
It is not readily apparent, which is why I propose, and I say this again, a national referendum or national something.
Dan, we have moved
to
on.
Clarify. Well, the country has not moved on.
There's a procedure
on.
Called the Constitutional
Before
Convention.
We can have
a Constitutional
referendum.
Convention, a referendum, clarifying the Second Amendment. And it may well
Before
be.
Before you have a national referendum, learn the history.
Well, I'll learn the history, but also learn what a military weapon is, because an AR-15
right.
Well,
Dan, please. So
not a military
we're talking about
weapon.
Being challenged. So you would never have been challenged until you got to college or graduate school.
Yeah. So then, you know, I was on a doctoral program in mathematics. And so there I am. And I got, you know, 20 or 30 guys, very smart, easily as smart as I am, in the program with me from all over the country. And I've never had a conversation, a political conversation, with anybody outside of New York in my life. And at some point...
You can say Goyim if you want,
I say... at some point, I didn't even know that Protestants were the majority.
There you go. I was
I'm
right.
not kidding. I thought Jews and Catholics were the majority. Yeah. You go out to Columbus and you find out that Jews and Catholics... What? What's a Jew? What's a Catholic? No. The food was different. Everything was different.
Irish Americans knew that Protestants were the majority.
Right. Yeah, we were well aware of it. Well
they
aware
did.
Of it.
They did. So I go and I get into a conversation at one point about the surplus wheat problem. And this guy, who was also a mathematics doctoral candidate, was very smart, very well-informed, and started spewing out all of the economic reasons why it was right to keep the wheat and not put it on the market and give it to people who were starving. And I had no arguments against him for one very simple reason. I had never heard that
That's
argument
right.
before.
That's right.
And I realized then, and it's been true ever since, that there is no parochialism so severe as New York liberal parochialism. And that is what we today call the blue bubbles on both coasts. We live in silos. We talk to ourselves. We like to make fun of the people in West Virginia and rural Alabama, who we say only talk to themselves, but we only talk to ourselves.
I'm going to play in some soundtrack music for your speech just now, if you don't mind, in the actual podcast, because it's stirring to me. I mean, do we all agree with what he's saying?
We do. I remember
to a degree. Although I grew up in northeastern Queens, which I can assure you has slipped outside the blue bubble.
Maybe never was in it. But yeah.
These dummy kids in these universities and these cowardly administrators shutting down every speaker that challalges them. What's so terrible? Just listen. Let them speak.
I do remember the first time I ever drove cross country, it was eye-opening because I grew up in North Jersey as well, northeast. And you get about, I mean, you only have to get like 90 minutes out of the New York metropolitan area and you're like, oh,
I got to move on because we're almost out of time. Next, because this is the ACLU. Next thing.
I want to also get to how Chris is doing on the new medication.
Okay, we'll get to it. So this
I'm feeling good.
We're going to talk about Trump. There was some new regulation where the Trump administration, and I don't know the details of it, decided that medical health practitioners who as a matter of conscience, didn't want to perform abortions would no longer have to do it. And the ACLU tweeted, "We'll see you in court, Mr. President." And this shocked me. And then I read a little about it. For instance, a woman wrote here, a neonatologist wrote, "The more I advance in my field of neonatology, the more it became the logical choice." I'm trying to read fast and I'm screwing it up.
Take your time.
"To recognize a developing fetus for what it is, a fetus instead of some sort of subhuman form. It just became so obvious that these were just developing humans." So this is a woman who's working in this and as a matter of conscience doesn't feel that she can kill this child anymore, the way she feels about it. And I say, how is it that the ACLU is arrogantly saying, "We'll see you in court." She's no issue. The same organization that will defend Muhammad Ali's right to not go and fight, a conscientious objector, won't have to go even fight for his country if we're or take arms for his country if we're threatened.
Raise the same question? And do you think that neonatologist would raise the same question if we were talking about 2 seconds after conception?
I don't know, but I think well, that there's a matter of conscience here, is what the ACLU should be concerned.
Freedom of conscience. There were people who, as a matter of conscience, wouldn't let their kids go to school with black people.
Right.
Conscience does not settle the issue.
We do draw lines. It only poses it. We do draw lines, but certainly.
But here's the thing: if there is a pharmacist on 23rd Street who is so morally against contraception because he thinks that the only reason to have sex is to bear children, and so that's God's command, and I cannot sell contraceptives, and he will not sell contraceptives. He doesn't have to sell those contraceptives, but the pharmacy does.
Okay.
And this woman, if she doesn't want to perform an abortion, she may not have to perform one, but the hospital she works at does.
I agree with you. The hospital has to. But she should have the right to not do it. And unless, I mean, you do agree with conscientious objection, right? You don't think you should force somebody. Now, of course, if everybody claimed conscientious objection status, we would have to disallow it.
I think a lot of this conscientious objection stuff is a cover. People claim the conscientious right not to serve black people in their restaurants when the civil rights law was first up for grabs. People claimed a right, not to, of conscience, the Muhammad Ali thing is irrelevant because Muhammad Ali affected nobody but himself. He was not claiming a conscientious right not to serve somebody. He was claiming a conscientious right not to kill.
Right, just like the woman in the hospital.
Well, but that's why I asked you the question about 2 minutes after conception. Because the Supreme Court decision that provided the right of a woman to have an abortion made a distinction between the third trimester, the second trimester, and the third trimester.
Yeah, you know that's a ridiculous decision.
No, it isn't a ridiculous decision because it basically falls on the question of that human life begins at a point where the developing fetus is capable of living outside the mother.
But that's a moving target.
It's a moving target within limits.
But now, Dr. Glass, with all due respect, now, we talked about the Second Amendment, and you said, you know, that it was a ridiculous decision, and they misinterpreted the Constitution.
That smells blood here.
I just failed to see how you could then accept Roe v. Wade as anything other than just judicial lawmaking.
Oh, no, that... You are terminally confused about your analogies. First of all,
I applaud you for getting back in the ring, Ben.
I know that you're obsessed with your misinterpretation of the Second Amendment, but read the goddamn history before you open your mouth again.
Read the goddamn history of the Constitution.
You can't handle the truth. I've never seen Dan.
What are you saying?
You're out of order. No, I agree with Dan about Roe. About Roe versus Wade, not about the Second Amendment.
Okay, but the point.
You're pointing at me.
Yeah, you got back in the ring.
He doesn't even know we're here.
Let me ask you two questions.
With all the respect, guys, let me ask the glass. Maybe
you're mad at me because you couldn't handle him.
Look, I need to go.
He shut you down, and now you're mad at me.
He didn't shut me down. You interpreted it as that meeting shut down.
But I was here for the history, not like you.
Now imagine they had guns.
But you guys need to be separated.
You're yelling at me because you want to yell at him. I don't want to yell at him because
he's afraid to yell at me.
I didn't do a thing to you.
He's a nice man. I don't want to yell at him.
I'm a nice man too.
But when he said that the AR-15 was a military weapon, and it clearly isn't, you didn't say.
Oh, he kicked your ass. Oh, motherfucker! He shot you down.
I did say that,
guys.
I was just.
You're not defending me.
Quietly agreeing with everything he said.
When I said the AR-15 is not a military weapon, and he said it is, and I'm right. You didn't defend me.
This is like like a guy who didn't stand up to his boss at work, and now you're trying to come home and hit your wife.
I never knew you were such a troublemaker.
You're a troublemaker.
What did I do?
I thought you guys were comedians.
Dan,
we got to move on.
Do you agree with me about Roe versus Wade?
I agree about Roe versus Wade.
Why you gotta shoot him in the foot, Dan?
But more importantly, I believe it's just surprising to me that the ACLU would inject itself into something as difficult as whether a human how a human being feels about whether they're killing someone or not. And no matter if you agree with me or not, I still think that where we do respect,
the reason is you can't support contraception unless you inject yourself into that.
We have to draw lines in certain places, just like we couldn't allow everybody to claim conscience.
And what about if...
Let me think. Just like we couldn't allow everybody to claim conscientious objector status and we wouldn't have an army, we would have to then say, no, we're going to draw lines. And we do draw lines in every one of these civil liberties. But when a doctor says, you know, I've been doing this work and now I realize and she's an expert, not Justice Blackmun, who had no idea, never seen an ultrasound. This woman who's dealing with it every day.
Yeah,
says,
but
you know,
she
could
have became a born again Christian. It's not clear
Listen, I had a baby. I've gotten women pregnant. I've had abortions. You all know that. I've said this on the show. However, our baby at 12 weeks, at 12 weeks was sucking its thumb. And this is something which nobody contemplated when Roe versus Wade came out. People really, and you know, I had another thought. You know, the picture of this woman in the Vietnam, a little girl in the Vietnam War, had a lot to do with turning tide against the war. I remember years ago, people said if we're going to have executions, we should show them on TV so people should see, people should understand what it is as an execution. I think the ACLU was sympathetic to that position. Liberals are very reluctant to any of these laws which try to encourage the woman to see these ultrasounds before the abortions. And it seems to me it's the only time where we think actually seeing something is going to lead, it's not going to lead to a better understanding, not going to lead to more insight into the act that they're committing. But the truth is, any parent knows when you see these ultrasounds of these three-month-old, whatever you want to call them, this is beyond Justice Blackmun's ability to decide for the nation of what this has. This is a matter of conscience. Whether you think it's okay 3 weeks, 3 months, four months, 5 months.
The question is, who makes that decision?
Right. So, but for the question is, who makes that decision?
And
I'm talking about the doctor performing the abortion. And I would think that wherever we can, we should always want to allow people their freedom of conscience until some point where we realize, you know, it just doesn't work this way. Society breaks down. We're going to have black people can't get a hotel room, whatever it is.
Do you remember the Hobby Lobby case?
Yeah.
You
understand my argument.
Yes,
it's hard. It's hard.
It is hard.
You had a lot of swag about it.
A lot of these issues are hard.
Yeah.
They're all hard, and they all involve drawing lines.
Right.
All of them. There is not a constitutional right that isn't hard. Right. You know, the First Amendment right to freedom of religion, the difference between the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause, presents very difficult issues all the time.
Right.
You know, if it's the position of the Establishment Clause that the government cannot fund religion, what about the government saying, we're not going to give discount Metro cards to ministers or priests because that's funding them? No, that would be discriminating against them because of their religion.
Would you stop a national Christmas tree?
Huh?
Would you, if you could push a button, have no more national Christmas tree?
I think that's an establishment of religion.
You think it's
I think it's an imposition by the government of the religious beliefs of some upon people who don't hold those beliefs.
And my position on that, and then we get to your medication, but I think you're right. But I think we should allow it anyway. I think at some point...
Well, we do allow it anyway.
Right, but I mean, I think it's right to allow it anyway.
And it's not, you know...
I think that...
But
going back to what you said earlier about when the
there
nation...
isn't a Jewish kid in the country when I was growing up in the 40s that didn't feel marginalized and vaguely threatened by the celebration of Christmas.
Well, you and my father are very similar generations.
Well, I'll speak as a Jewish kid that grew up a few decades later. Not too many.
He said the same thing.
A few decades later... We love Christmas.
Now we know.
No, because you love presents. That's when they turned Hanukkah. That's when they turned, the Jews turned Hanukkah from a minor holiday into a major one.
It might well have been different in the 40s, but I can tell you now, not just because we get a couple of weeks off from school, we love the songs. We love, first of all, if you've never heard Stevie Nicks' version of Silent Night, do yourself a favor and listen to it.
Dan, it's all, Dan, 40 years earlier, it was an incitement to hatred.
Listen, we're over time. I want to make my last thing, and then you can talk
Stevie
about
Nicks' about Silent Night.
No, he's going to be busy looking up the history of the Second
Amendment.
I intend to do my research.
One second. You said something very interesting before about how the Second Amendment started, which was that in those days, each state was really the center of power. And each state lived much more than today how it wanted to live and made its own laws. And we've gotten very, very far away from that as a nation. And I think that we paid a big price for that in terms of being able to live as a nation. And that's why I as much as I think in principle a lot of these things are right, I think practically I'm always saying to myself, you know what, just let Mississippi live within certain limits, the way Mississippi wants to live. If Mississippi doesn't want to allow abortion, let them not allow abortion.
What about if they want to have slavery?
No, I said within limits.
Well, who decides that?
Well, slavery is in the Constitution.
Yeah, but that's people's rights. That's people's rights.
No, it's abolished in the Constitution.
It is not.
The 13th Amendment didn't abolish slavery?
Not the 13th Amendment did, but before the 13th Amendment, before the Civil War.
I'm saying if they want to have a Christmas tree, if they want to say a prayer before school.
I
feel like a lot of people living in the Midwest and the South feel like, I wish these fucking New York Jews would keep out of their fucking law books and stay out of our
life.
The reason they feel that way is because they're the majority and they get to say what they celebrate.
But they also say
if they weren't the majority, they wouldn't feel that.
But they also say what you say, which is, this is the way it was when the country started. If it was wrong, they would have said so then.
They did.
They're changing the rules on us.
They did.
Okay. We could talk about more. We're out of time, so go ahead. Ask Chris about his...
Well, first of all, I want to say that I do intend to do my research on the Second Amendment. I will warn you, however, that my research is thorough research, and it may...
And not a moment too soon,
It may not be... I can only say that if it was as clear and unambiguous as you've said, hard to imagine the Supreme Court would have decided otherwise. Because I assume they're also educated on the Second Amendment, but I will look into that.
Yes, but they're not intellectually honest. It was 5-4, and Scalia wrote the majority opinion. The same guy who threw the election to Bush in Bush v. Gore when he wouldn't allow the state Supreme Court to regulate its own laws, despite the fact that had been his mantra for decades.
All right, Dan, can we talk to Chris about his...
All right, now,
I also want to say...
And the Supreme Court also once upheld the constitutionality of slavery. You can't settle the argument by citing
I can't settle the argument by citing the Supreme Court. I also can't settle the argument by citing Ira Glass, which is why.
Glasser.
Right, and that's because Ira Glass is not me.
Ira Glass.
You can settle it by citing me.
I will settle it by doing my own research, and rest assured it will be very thorough.
Okay.
I want to say...
If there's five justices who voted one way in a Supreme Court decision, why is one of them the swing vote in this case? And why was Scalia the one who swung
Well, he wrote the majority.
Oh, he wrote the majority. Okay, go ahead.
I also want to say, whatever I did to make you so mad, I do apologize. It was never my intent.
Well, here's what you did. You assumed that I was getting my ass kicked in the argument. Nothing is decided until I've done my research and can come back and confirm or deny.
We have a few more minutes to wrap it up.
But we want to talk about Chris Gethardt's mental health.
Yes, go ahead.
He is a gentle, law-abiding mental case.
Uh-huh.
And what are you taking these days?
I'm taking Lamictal and Wellbutrin.
Lamictal, this sounds hardcore, like not your everyday...
It's actually less hardcore. The most hardcore I've ever been on was Risperdal. That was an antipsychotic that I was on for 2 years.
You see what I'm dealing with, folks? I'm dealing with a full-on psycho.
Oh, that's that's despicable what you just did.
Oh, I say what
it is.
He took you down on reason, and you're like a wrestling
he's
been despicable
band guy
all night. You don't expect him to change now, do you?
He's like a Rowdy Roddy Piper. Being a heel.
Chris knows.
This guy's insulting me. He's never pronounced my name correctly one time. I never get mad.
Chris Gethard, right?
Gethard. You've been saying Gethard.
I think I might have said Gethard.
That's the correct in German pronunciation.
Really?
Yes. Do your research.
Right. Yes, by all means.
He knows I'm kidding with him. Obviously,
he doesn't know you're kidding.
Stand-up comedy is the one place where being mentally disturbed is a compliment. You show me a stand-up comic with
It's actually a job requirement.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you. And the first thing we've agreed on all night. The fact is, if I said you were mentally sound, that would be a terrible insult to you.
Yeah, I mean,
because you can't be funny and be mentally sound.
Yeah, I think probably. We got
to. We have to go. Chris, do you want to say anything else? Last.
Thank you so much for having me. I hope that when we move on to the next phase of our night, that there's no awkwardness here, because I think we all just got caught up in something, right?
Exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah. Chris Gethard, watch him on True Television.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Comedy Television Network, True TV.
My show comes back March 20th.
March 20th.
What's it called?
Just remember.
The Chris Gethard Show.
Just remember, never apologize to somebody who's been abusing you.
Thank you so much.
Good night,
Thank
everybody.
Thank you so much.
Cue the music.